Episode 30. Everybody likes to exit. It's like getting off that long, long highway after a really long day, or getting out of a tight spot like a really bad argument. In this episode, I'm discussing how to create the perfect exit when life is chaotic and the goal is to make the scene safe. Chaos happens. Here we choose to lead chaos rather than be led by chaos. We are sharing tips, resources, networks, and interviews that help you validate your ability to lead chaos successfully and remain a steady on. Are you ready to lead chaos? Let's do it. This is the Leading Chaos Podcast, and I am your host, Rhea Wincolor. Welcome to the show. This episode is going to be on the fringe of a little bit of a metaphor for our life because the topic is exits. And an exit, metaphorically speaking, is like one of the biggest things we'll ever do in our life. It's the birth and then the exit, the leaving of this plane of existence that we have the opportunity to be in. But in terms of crisis intervention, it also has its place, and it's a place that really sits high on the mantle of importance, because a good exit can deflate a very volatile scene quickly, and that is the goal. How to deflate violence, whether it's a really awful argument or at the higher peak, a fisticuffs situation. So an exit has a lot of importance if you are a crisis intervener. But as you're listening to today's episode, I want you also to be thinking in terms of the term exit and how it pertains to life in general. Because the way we move through arguments and conflict and chaos has such an unbelievable impact on our life overall. I mean, I often say in a training that you can't be one way at work and then another way at home. We often find that there's a thread of similarity on how we conduct ourselves. And certainly, it's time well spent to creating the perfect exit. And that's what we're doing today. So thank you for joining. And for those of you who are new to this podcast, what I'm doing is reading out of my book, which is called Leading Chaos, An Essential Guide to Conflict Management. And if you go to the leadingchaospodcast.com website, you could get a link there to the section on books, because this book is available both in paperback and in ebook form and in English and Dutch. And right now I am up to page 54, which is in chapter 5. And actually, I don't put the chapter numbers on the top. They're just called, they just have a title. And this one is called, Is the Scene Safe? And particular to exits is the opportunity to create a safe scene. And that is a skill. So that's what I'm going to be looking at today. And this is really the a main piece of what I have been discussing throughout this Leading Chaos story series on this podcast, which is how to follow the response protocol. And the response protocol is such, and I'm, for those of you who have been following right along, I'm going to kind of be virtually testing you. So here we go. We come into any given situation, and the first thing we ask ourselves is, am I safe? And while we're doing that, we are also taking time to, can I hear you shout out? Pause, and then along with me, we're all going to breathe in. One, two, three. Hold it and breathe out. Exhale. So we ask ourselves, am I safe? And we pause and exhale. And what that is allowing us to do is to garner our self-control and to decipher whether or not we are indeed safe or not, because we're looking initially at personal safety. That's part of the response protocol. Now, if I'm not safe, my goal becomes to make myself safe. And we have different tips on that. I'm not going to go over that right now, but you could go to some past episodes. If you just go back, we're in episode or part 13 of the series. So if you go just back like to episode 8 or 9, you're going to be getting some of those tips, which I really encourage you to do. But let's say that we are safe. And so my next question is the scene safe? And in the response protocol, this is part, I should say, of the response crisis intervention curriculum, we consider that any conflict, even if it's really minute, it tells us that the scene isn't safe, because truth is, we all know that even a really small conflict can become immediately explosive. So my goal becomes then, very simple, to make the scene safe. And that's what we're talking about. Making the scene safe is essentially creating an exit. And the sooner that you create an exit out of that kind of nastiness, what you find is immediate de-escalation. Now, no, I never say that the goal is to de-escalate. And this is a bit of a thorny topic for some, because there are many practitioners that believe their goal is to de-escalate a situation. And when I say practitioners, I'm talking about professional interveners. And that is exactly what I do. I'm a professional intervener. I teach a staff development program called Response Training Programs. It's a curriculum. And this curriculum is geared towards people who work in mental health or in treatment centers or who are first responders. And it's also user-friendly for families and people who need to also manage their own anger, because I believe that if everybody is speaking the same language, we'll all know how to work together. So it's a pretty universal curriculum. But what happens in this field or line of work is that, again, a lot of people feel that, well, my goal is I have to de-escalate that person. And I believe that is an unattainable goal. When you focus on de-escalation, what you're essentially saying is, I can control that other person. And I haven't met a person yet that I could control. I mean, I have enough trouble trying to control my cat or my dog. They have their own kind of free thinking. I mean, I could put a leash on a dog, but they could also be kind of stubborn. And if I want to use brute force, sure, I can make an animal do that. But I don't want to do that to an animal, and I certainly don't want to do that to another human. The process is such that if we change it around a little bit and we look at it as not trying to like de-escalate, but we look at what is actually attainable. The one thing that's really attainable is my ability to create scene safety. And in the process of making a scene safe, people de-escalate out of their own free will. And that's the cool thing. So how do we make a scene safe? Well, again, if you're reading along with me, I'm on page 54. And on the top of the page, there is a graph. And this graph is also part of the PowerPoint from the response curriculum. And I do have it up on the website right now, where you would go to episode 30. And you could scroll down and you'll see a picture of what I'm discussing. And it says essentially response protocol, but in the book it says scene safety goal, make the scene safe. And the first thing we have up there to make a scene safe, and what I really consider the quickest way to make a scene safe, and let me explain what an unsafe scene is. In this case, it's typically two people are arguing, because you need to make a party. And so there's going to be some kind of like little, you know, disagreement going on. So the quickest way to do that is to separate conflicting parties. You provide them with an exit. And that is so easy to do. You know, two kids are arguing. You just ask one to come the other way. And at the same time, you're not getting involved in the discussion, which we went on earlier episodes of drop the content. How do we avoid not getting pulled in? Well, instead of saying, you know, you walk up to two kids who are arguing, or they could be two adults, it doesn't matter, and you just say, excuse me. If they pay attention to you, you say, thank you for listening, and then you say, Joe, come walk with me. And that, there it is, bingo. All of a sudden, it's decompressed. You could do this whether you're a professional intervener or you're with a family member. And if they keep on saying, no, I want to talk to that person. Hey, well, you know, wait a minute. You could say, you know, I want to hear all about it. But just walk with me for a minute. Step away over here. And people will do that. Why do they do that? Because you just provided an exit. And not only just any exit, but a great exit. One that people will follow because you're not saying, no, you come over here, you dumbbell. You know, you're acting like a doofus. Stop looking so stupid. That's not a great exit. But if you are inviting and you, my childhood name calling is coming up. If you are inviting and you tell that person, you know, just come, turn away, give them something very concrete to do, they will follow you. That's a beautiful exit. That's like driving down that highway and seeing the sign that says, happy times, pull off here. I'll take that exit. People will follow if you create the perfect exit. So from the top of the page here, and the top of the graph, and what we follow in the response protocol, how to make a scene safe, first exit, separate conflicting parties. That's your only goal. Don't get into discussion what they're arguing about. Just think separate. This will work whether it is, you know, many, many different levels. And actually, in next week's episode, I'm going to be talking about a specific skill and that I used many years ago. And now it's kind of like my, I don't know, I guess my motto. But I'll hold off on that. Let's go to the next one. The next one you can do is how to create a safe scene is to remove objects. And what that means is sometimes you have, a very busy room with physical objects like chairs and couches, TV sets, tables, stuff on the floor, rugs, and all those can be really, really hazardous. So by just moving sometimes and creating an opening of space, you change the scene and give folks a little bit more breathing room. And that is creating an exit again. By moving all that stuff, it changes up the space a bit. And if you go back again to another episode where I was talking about that intervention I did during a wedding with that young woman, and it was really bright out, and she was kind of having a psychotic episode. I guess not kind, it was. And I asked the young men who were kind of around and in this big barn and kind of watching and not really knowing what to do, I asked them to just turn down the lights. And turning down that lights was removing the brightness, and it helped her and everyone else to kind of settle down a little bit instead of being under those like interrogation lights. So that's not even like moving a physical object, but changing the lighting of a scene. And that is creating an exit. You have a really busy room with lots of chairs and tables. You can move them out of the way. Give that person a bit of space, and it might even be you, a bit of space and to like move out. I know when I'm upset and angry, and certainly I do get upset and angry, I have to sometimes walk out of the house and just be out in the yard. Or go for a walk down the country road, clear my head. That is removing myself from the objects and giving myself some space. So it's a very simple technique to do, and certainly it's a safety technique to do. The next one we call containing an angry person. Now, containing someone who is really volatile doesn't mean that we're doing a physical intervention. And what I mean by that is we're not going in and grabbing them, but we're asking or telling the person to, or offering a timeout. That's one way to do it. You know, you want to just step away for a little bit. That's that walk away moment that provides them with an exit. Or you might have a situation where you're the host at a party and you know that there's going to be some drinking, and hopefully your keeping an eye on that and not letting folks get into their cars intoxicated. And perhaps there's a basket, which might be a universal way to do that. It's a good thing to do. Everybody puts their keys in a basket. And do you have somebody who is kind of like the DD, the designated driver at the party? Maybe it's a DDP, designated driver party person, DDPP, something like that. Anyways, that person, hopefully the way you would contain that intoxicated person is to not give them their keys. Well, they might get upset and angry, but in many ways you're creating an exit for them. Instead of them losing face and kind of going off, you could say, you know, come on over here. Let me talk to you. Let's walk it off a little bit. I'm more than happy to find those keys for you, but let's walk and talk and make sure that you're going to get home safely. That is creating an exit. So you could see like this pattern. Whenever you think that, wow, the scene isn't safe, you could just think to yourself, how do I create an exit here? What's going to help me and those who are in distress or in kind of a troublemaking mood? What's going to be the perfect exit to lead this on? And sometimes just having those little touchstone phrases, I know for myself and for those that attend the response crisis intervention training, those touchstone phrases really go a long way when a scene is really chaotic because it gives you something to focus on. Geez, the scene isn't safe. What do I do? Make the scene safe. How do I do that? Create an exit. All right, so let's keep on going here. Going down the list, another way to make a scene safe is to move away from spectators. Imagine there is, you know, the school scene, the classic schoolyard scene at recess or in the hallway where there's a fight. And of course, you know, the thing about violence is that it's very seductive and it attracts people and they all come towards it. The great way to decompress that is to move the spectators away. You create an exit for everyone else by saying, hey, come with me, come this way, walk over here, turn away, step back. That is creating an exit for the spectators because people get a little stuck. Like they're, I don't know, I guess they're like deer in headlights and they can't stop staring at the oddity of anger in front of them. But it happens to all of us and we just stare at it, kind of like going down the highway and there's an accident. We all slow down. We got to take a peek, even though what we see might not be something that we really want to remember. So we want to create an exit for that by moving spectators away. Conversely, let's say the spectators don't move away and you have a person who's in distress. Maybe they're angry. Maybe they're having a psychotic episode. Maybe it's been a domestic disturbance. It could be any situation. If I can't move the spectators away, then I move that person away from the spectators or those people. And that is that kind of classic saying, you want to help that person, you know, not lose face, which is a funny phrase, but what it means is to not make them feel embarrassed. And when you give that person the option and give them a nice exit to follow, they'll go along with it. Nobody wants to stay there looking like a dumbbell in front of everybody or feeling embarrassed. They will take that exit. And it's as easy as saying, you know, come on, walk with me over here. Let me talk to you. That really works because people will say, you know, all right, why stand there and be, you know, grunting and snorting and pounding your fist against the wall in front of everybody? So creating safety, move away from the spectators. Now, the next thing that we have on the PowerPoint, we call create an alliance. And that is, well, there's a lot of parts to this. But what I'd like to talk about is this particular scenario that happened to me years ago. And it's in the book. It's on page 56. And the scenario, I titled it as At the Roadside Speaking to the Angry Crowd. And that's essentially what it was. I was at the roadside and I was speaking to a really angry crowd. And let me give you a little background. This was in the winter and it was a really dark night. So I imagine it was probably like in December, early January. And the roads were super, super slick and they had like black ice on it. And I had noticed like driving and it was late at night, but not too late. And I was only about a mile or so from my house. And I noticed up ahead that there was a bit of traffic. And this was, you know, on country roads, they were paved, but I knew immediately intuitively, because I have this unbelievable empathic sense, that there was some type of accident. So what I did, classically do, instead of pulling all the way up, I didn't get too close to the scene, but I pulled over and I stepped out of my car pretty quickly. In fact, a little bit too quickly, because as soon as I did, I slipped and I fell flat on my back. And to this day, I could still remember that fall because it was one of those falls that I didn't like roll back. I fell flat, like boom, right on my back, like a vertical to a horizontal position, toot sweet, like really fast. And it makes that like echo sound in your body. It's an awful, awful feeling. And it's only happened to me a couple times in my life and typically around ice. And I was a little bit dazed for a minute. So what happened is I got myself up off the ground, like, you know, feeling kind of like a doofus, and I walked, you know, the 25 yards or so to the scene ahead, and I was kind of halfway there and thinking, yeah, you know, nobody's really noticing me, because I could notice it's a bit of arguing up there. I was thinking about, let me just get in my car and go back, but of course I didn't, because it's just not what I do, and our task in life is to help others, right? That's creating the exit for us when we finally leave, to look back in our life and say, what did we do to contribute to the goodness for all? Not just for ourselves, but for everyone. And I believe that's really what being a first responder, whether you're a medical first responder or you're emotional first responder who helps in those kind of emotional crises that happen. We're just that good person as how we help others. So, of course, I kept walking up ahead. And what happened was I just kind of buckled myself up. And as I approached, I saw there were a number of men yelling at these two other guys. And one guy was sitting in his car and the other was lying on his back in the middle of the road, the same road that I just fallen on. And I had recognized these guys, but I didn't really know any of them personally. And I could see that there was this one young man who was focused on the person, the guy who was lying on the road. And he was saying something like, I'm going to teach you a lesson, you drunk. Look at what you two idiots did to my car. And at the same time, I was observing the crowd. And none of them, I could tell, and they were all guys, none of them were going to really intervene. It was just waiting for this ticking time bomb to go off. So what I did is I use my authority. And this is one of the things that you could use sometimes to make a scene safe. And I walked up and I said, I'm an EMT. I'll check out this man. You know, I called out. I came out of the darkness, this woman. And the whole crowd of guys, they stepped back. And I moved into the glow. You know, it was like he was not in the headlight on the ground. And the angry young guy who had said, I'm going to teach you a lesson, says, you know, the guy lying down, he wasn't worth it. And I just kind of replied, I had my job to do, because I was speaking with authority. And I stepped closely, and the guy on the ground, you know, he just was kind of spewing out all this kind of, he was obviously drunk, and a babble of like angry words. And I looked down at him and I said, I'm not the enemy, I'm here to help. And what happened was, the voices all grew quiet, and I proceeded to check him out on the ground, you know, and make sure he was okay. And in the end, you know, I found no one was hurt, and there was a vehicle that had been damaged. And at the same time where I was there, you know, kind of doing my checkup, a police cruiser did arrive, and I made my exit. So a couple things happen. It's all part of the exit and creating that scene safety. That is making that initial assessment. I blew it getting out of the car. There's no doubt about it. I didn't really consider my own personal safety, and black ice is black ice. It could catch up on you. But as I approached, I really embodied my authority. I wasn't I was certified at that time as an EMT. So saying I'm an EMT and arriving on the scene, it gave me that opening to go in. And it's kind of like carte blanche. People will let you do that, especially when you're a medical person. And then not getting involved in the argument. I dropped the content. I didn't get in like who was right or who was wrong. I said, I have my job to do. Let me go and do that. And making a connection with a person who was everybody's focus on the ground, who I guess probably was responsible for the accident. He was intoxicated. I could have gotten angry. I could have made it my issue right then, but I didn't. I said, I am not the enemy, and I'm here to help. And that created an exit for his babbling to go. So there's so much that we could do in any kind of giving situation. I was able to move the focus of attention away from anger and move it towards what people consider de-escalation. And that is a beautiful thing, creating that exit. Not only did I create an exit, I created an alliance with the guy on the ground who was intoxicated, but also all the guys that were standing there arguing. Because I wasn't just that man's EMT, I was everyone's EMT. I was that first responder coming to aid. And that holds a lot of authority. And I like to say, never underestimate the authority that you are granted. It's amazing if you just remember what your job is and that people actually do want somebody to stand up and say, hey, I'm the adult here. That's a great thing. That creates an exit for all the folks there, whether they're adults or not, who are kind of acting like children by arguing. We all want an adult. It's a good thing to embody your own adult. Final piece is there is also the technique called create an exit. And that's very particular for crisis interveners. And I do want to touch upon it. We use this in settings where you might be working with a colleague, and you could use this at home too. Say you're the parents, or say that you have a work colleague, and one of you has just gotten too involved in the argument. And what we do in the work setting is you want to check in and make sure that that person can handle the situation. So you'll say, hey, Joe, you got a phone call. Now, if Joe responds and says, oh, I'll take that call later, that is telling me that Joe's okay and he could handle the intervention, and I'm going to just kind of stand back and maintain that surrounding scene safety. But if I notice that Joe has gotten too emotionally charged and too involved at the scene at hand and isn't thinking clearly, and Joe could be a parent too, I'll say, Joe, the doctor's on the phone. Or Joe, the principal's on the phone. Or Joe, your mom is on the phone. Some kind of keyword that I formulate with Joe ahead of time. So when we do get lost in ourselves, and let's face it, we all get lost in ourselves and we don't think clearly, we'll have that little kind of safe word, that safe phrase that will say, hey, this is your exit. You have to stand down. And I really recommend this for professional first responders. Certainly, we're getting a lot of focus these days on the police departments standing down. And I would recommend that to any police officer to have that with their coworkers so that you have your key phrases that let you step away from a scene if you're getting too hothead. And that could be, hey, the captain's on the phone, the lieutenant's on the phone, whatever it might be, the commissioner's on the phone. That would really have you step down. Or it could be for military personnel, any type of first responder in that professional capacity, and certainly for those of us who are more the layperson working in what the professional capacity of being a parent or being a loved one, a friend, a neighbor, to have something that we can do to create an exit for ourselves. So in the end, make that scene safe. You have all these different options for creating an exit. Quick review here is you can make a scene safe by separating conflicting parties, by removing physical objects. You can make a scene safe by containing an angry person. Hey, let me take those keys. Let's take a walk. You could create an exit by moving away from spectators or moving the spectators away. And you could also create an exit by creating an alliance. I am not the enemy. I am here to help. Let's find a common goal. And you could create an exit by creating an exit by having a standardized terminology that you all use to check in and call upon when tempers are flaring. Joe, you got a phone call, which means AKA step away from the door. All right, that's a lot this week, and I hope between now and the next episode, you could think of some exit strategies that you have used just to get through the week to make it a little bit better. And if you get a chance, why don't you send me a little bit of a note on that? And I'd love to share that with the rest of the listeners. And meanwhile, we'll be looking forward to next week on discussing a little bit more on creating that alliance and how this all comes together and discussing essentially what is your one-liner? What's that initial phrase that you always count on when tempers are flaring? And certainly I have mine and I can't wait to share that with you. So until then, this is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Look for those exits in life, because life is short and doing it well is finding that perfect exit. So when we say goodbye, it's a farewell that we feel good about. Be kind, be safe. Ciao for now.